Well, hey there. Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. Yep, this week it's just you and me. Because there's so much packed into this show that there's no time for witty banter. Sorry. So this week, I'm just going to give you a rundown quickly of what you're in for, what kind of treats you're in for. My feature, I got a chance to speak with Amy Ziff, who is the founder of Non-Toxic Certified, a certification program and labeling program to help us understand and see when we buy a product just how toxic it isn't, hopefully. Interesting conversation with her. Did a Green Divas foodie file with a woman named Sun, also known as the Hungry Gopher. She talks about making kimchi, A, why we would want to make kimchi, and B, exactly how to do it. And she is Korean, so she knows. Green Divas at Home with Lisa Perez this week from Ron and Lisa. She talks about mold, which is a little icky and upsetting, but she gives us some great ideas on how to deal with it. And then you're going to want to stay tuned for this week's Green Divas Eco Sexy with Veronica Monet, one of the authors from the Eco Sexuality book. And I'm just going to let you listen in and catch up and see what it's all about. These are all good conversations with great information. Hopefully will be helpful. In the meantime, I would encourage you to go to thegreendivas.com, thegreendivas.com. We have lots of new posts and interesting things going on there that you might not hear about today. So, check it out. Follow us on Twitter at The Green Divas or me at Green Diva Meg or Instagram, both at Green Diva, at The Green Divas and at Green Diva Meg. And find us on Facebook. We've got all kinds of fun stuff coming up. So stay tuned.
The Green Divas love food. Organic, local, fresh, whole, delicious food. Here now is another Green Diva foodie file.
I'm pretty excited about this particular Green Divas foodie file because one of my favorite things is kimchi. And, you know, I've never made it. And I know it's not horribly complicated, but I'm pretty excited to meet and get a chance to talk with this lovely woman, Sun Chung, who is also known as the Hungry Gopher. She's got these great little videos. Love the Hungry Gopher, like, moniker there. She focuses on simple, healthy, delicious meals that we can make at home. And, of course, there's a cool Korean flair to it. Hi, Sun.
Hi, Meg. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm kind of hungry, actually, and I know I can't have my kimchi this minute, but I might make some for later.
Sounds great. Sounds like a plan.
So first, maybe tell us why kimchi is, I mean, I know that it's a healthy food and a great addition to any meal, but why would we want to incorporate it?
So the benefits of kimchi go on and on. It's packed with nutrition, and it's full of minerals and vitamins. But the biggest benefit may be health bacteria called lactobacilli. These are the good guys that keep our gut healthy and intact. So why is providing importance to begin with, right?
Right.
So 80% of your immune system lives in your gut. So imagine that 80%. Is a big number for your gut health. And even, like, I recently read this article about how the bacteria count in your body is 10 times more than your cell count.
Wow.
So I know, it's just mind-blowing, right? So it's so important then to help healthy bacteria, so-called probiotic in your body, to have your immune system, you know, all working fluidly. And, you know, not to mention all these nutritious values that kimchi brings to your diet. About 6 months ago, I got even email from one of my viewers, and this was a really heartfelt email that this nurse, John, was having such a difficult time with his weight loss over the years. And his son is very much into kimchi, and he introduced kimchi to nurse John, and he said he was shockingly surprised that after he introduced probiotic in his diet on a daily basis, he said his weight just melted away. And
yeah,
he said he lost so much pounds over like the course of 2 years. And I read that and it literally blew my mind, and I was really taken by that.
Yeah, I do notice that when my gut health and I'm eating good probiotic food, I do slim down a little more naturally.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Plus, I just love it. I love the taste.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So there are kimchi is something that utilizes fermentation, which is the ancient methods of preserving food, right? It's human beings actively have used fermentation as a preserving method.
Right.
About 7,000 years ago, and it's nothing new, but it's a forgotten art that we don't practice much anymore. And this modern technology that we have to preserve food is, you know, such as canning and refrigeration, radiation. Right. It doesn't work with living things. Basically, all the things are already died by the time you consume them.
Right.
So having kimchi and like naturally fermented food is such a wonderful and most natural way to have probiotics in your diet.
So tell me, what are the, I know kimchi can vary depending on the vegetables. You can make it a little spicier or not. Tell us what the basic, you know, recipe is and how we can build a good kimchi.
Good kimchi, actually, there are over 180 varieties of kimchi in Korea. So there are so many recipes you can follow, really. The essence of kimchi is it's really salted vegetables. So the three things that you need, just three essential things, is a vegetable of your choice and salt and water. The most common ones that we know and the most popular ones is napa cabbage with, you know, seasoned with Korean red pepper called gochugaru, which is delicious. And the seasoning part is what makes kimchi. That's such a part from sauerkraut and other pickled products. But it can be, you know, very, very simple. I have some cucumber kimchi recipe that'll take you 5 minutes to make. And so it can be as simple as that, or you can make napa cabbage, which can take a couple of hours, but it's something you can keep in your refrigerator for 6 months or to a year. Kimchi never goes bad. It's just different sets of fermentation that once it gets older, it gets a little more pungent and more sour.
Mm. I like. Yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I can't tell you enough. I literally grew up with it. I was born and raised in Korea, and I came here in my 20s. So, you know, just like any family in Korea, my mother and my grandmother made lots and lots of kimchi at home when I was growing up, and I help them peeling the garlic, cleaning the vegetables, and tasting the seasonings.
Mm.
So it's just part of my DNA. And I know making kimchi seems intimidating at first. I know in firsthand, like when I moved to America, I attempted to make my own kimchi for the first time. And surprisingly, I failed so badly.
That's funny.
I know, right? Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I failed 3 times and I was still heartbroken. I didn't make it for another 3 years. That's how I said I was. And I ate store-bought kimchi back then, and I just missed homemade kimchi so much. It just tastes so much better.
So is it? How do you fail on it? Is it that you don't get the right proportion of salt, water, and spice or whatever?
Surprisingly, yes. The most important part is actually brining part. You can either dry salt it or you can do wet brining. That is one of the most important parts. That process, you have to do it right. So the vegetable will be, you know, it'll keep this nice texture of crunchiness.
Oh.
It wouldn't get mushy.
Okay.
And the seasoning have to be, just like any seasoning, it has all these elements of saltiness, sweetness, umami to it.
Yes.
So it gives the whole salted vegetable really round flavor. And I guess the combination of failing in both of those yields a poor result, I guess. But once you get hang of the concept and learn some techniques, it's really easy thing to do.
Well, I know that you have some really cute videos that are very helpful in showing us how to do this. And I know you have recipes. And I think you'll be sharing some with us for our website and our listeners too, right?
Absolutely. I have four kimchi videos and two classic kimchi and two little not so classic but more fun ones like tomato kimchi. That's my mom's original recipe.
Ooh.
And they're... Yeah, I know, right? And when the summer comes, that's what I usually make because you make with vegetables, whatever that's seasonally available. I mean, going to farmer's market is my thing. I go and I'm like, ooh, they'll make good kimchi and I'll try a recipe with that.
Yes.
So once you understand concept, like it'll be very easy thing to do. And I've been making kimchi in my own kitchen over a decade. So I'm a good, you know, proof of that.
So I'm going to suggest that our people go to, is it hungrygopher.com?
Yes, it is hungrygopher.com. And I have a couple of written recipes with step-by-step each to follow videos. And I have, you know, my viewers are just raving about the recipes they tried. And the ones, you know, they're like, I've always wanted to make kimchi like you, but they've never made it. And they're like very excited to have this achievement, which it is. And I have to tell you, I mean, I have many friends in Korea that they even have made kimchi because they get their kimchi from their mother.
Yeah.
So if you make your own, you should be really proud.
Well, I'm going to do this and then we'll have to talk again. In the meantime, I know that we'll be sharing all this information also on thegreendivas.com. But check out Hungry Gopher. She's got all kinds of other fun recipes, but we'll be doing some kimchi and checking back. Thanks so much for calling, Sun.
Sounds awesome. Thanks for having me. It was wonderful.
Hope you're hungry. For more easy and delicious recipes and even more foodie information, go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. The Chesapeake is known for its delicious blue crabs, but maintaining a healthy fishery may become more difficult as the water warms. Each year, when the waters of Chesapeake Bay drop below 54 degrees, blue crabs burrow into the sand to survive. While the crabs are in this dormant state, scientists test hundreds of sites across the bay to make a population estimate. Thomas Miller, director of the University of Maryland's Chesapeake Biological Laboratory, says the information is used to set annual blue crab harvest limits.
If we want to be able to manage that fishery so it's sustainable, so that the next generation of fishermen can also catch crabs, it's important to know their abundance.
But Miller says that as the climate changes and water temperatures rise, blue crabs may forego their winter dormancy for year-round activity. Current estimates predict the Chesapeake will warm enough to prompt this change by the turn of the century. That will make it much more difficult to count the crabs, so until new methods are developed, scientists will have to rely on less accurate ways to estimate population size, leaving blue crabs more vulnerable to overharvesting. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Looking for low-stress ways to create a healthier, non-toxic environment in your home? The Green Divas make it fun and easy with useful information for making a beautiful and eco-friendly Green Diva home.
Oh, we're back again with the beautiful Lisa Barris of Lisa and Ron, the Healthy Home Dream Team. These two are all over the place. They are so much fun. And, you know, Lisa is an author and expert primarily on interior design and building and how – I think she's a certified green building professional, right?
That's right. Yep, and a building biologist.
It's so cool. So one of the things we're talking about today relevant to all this is mold. And I have very personal experience with mold. I was telling Lisa before we started recording that I wanted to talk about this selfishly because I believe that mold has affected my world. I know we had a house 3 years ago. We lived in a place for 10 years that I believed had mold. And my lungs started to become weird, and I'd have these coughing things like I had the plague, but I wasn't sick. And my doctor said to me, "Do you have asthma?" I said, "Well, I don't know. You're the doctor." And, you know, we tested the house, and the result was negative, but I never believed it. And then we moved. And I don't have the I know this house is clean. I sense that. But my lungs have been affected. And I'm still dealing with it to the effect that I'm not going to say I have asthma forever, but I'm dealing with asthma right now, and I'm kind of pissed.
Yeah, well, you should be. You know, mold is everywhere. It's in our air. It's in our indoor home. It's in our outdoor air. But the problem is when mold overgrowth becomes too high in our homes, and that's when we know we have a problem, which it sounds like you did.
Yeah.
Just because you didn't find the results on the test doesn't mean that you didn't have it. It could mean that the tests weren't done appropriately and or you didn't do enough tests. Well, that's a common mistake. Some people, you know, will only test the air and not the surface and vice versa. You really need to do both. You need to compare your test to the outdoor air sample. So a professional would likely know how to do all that, but it's sometimes it's not tested correctly. So listen to your sense of intuition and, of course, your symptoms, and it sounds like you did have some exposure. And women, we tend to be more affected to these exposures of toxins and biological contaminants in our home for a variety of reasons. A lot of times we're in the home more, and number two, we have more body fats, we store toxins more, we're more susceptible. And we have a keener sense of smell, so we are able to pick up on things generally more than men.
Oh, so, I have an annoying sense of smell, according to my family.
Well, you know what? As a doctor once told me, I'm very sensitive, he said, you know what, you're lucky because you'll sense things sooner than someone else and be able to actually pinpoint and diagnose and eliminate the issue. Whereas, you know, how many people do we see? They're perfectly healthy, and then one day they get diagnosed with cancer or whatever the issue
is.
Right. So this is why it's important to tune into our bodies, listen to our senses, pay attention to your home, pay attention to the smells and what you see. We spend 90% of our time indoors as Americans, and our indoor air, according to the EPA, is 2 to 5 times more polluted than the outdoor air.
Yeah.
So it's really important to pay attention. So we'll go through some mold issues and kind of just help people listening to identify if they do have mold in their home.
Okay.
So number one, if you are smelling a musty odor or you see visible water damage in your home, that is a red flag. Mold is, it can be many different colors. It can be black, green, red, blue, and it needs 4 things to survive. So this is key. Mold needs 4 things to survive.
Okay.
1, it needs water and moisture.
Right.
This is the number one thing. It can't live if it doesn't have a water source. And this could come from leaks. It could also come from high humidity. This is why we see mold issues in, you know, high humid areas of the country, like Florida and things like that. And condensation. Number 2, it needs food. It has to eat, and it likes to eat building material, so organic material, which could be ceiling tile, could be wood, it could be drywall, or even paper.
Okay.
It needs oxygen, so that's pretty much anywhere. And it needs temperatures between about 40 and 110 degrees Fahrenheit. So our homes, as you can see, are a nice little breeding ground, especially if you have a leak, then there you go. And there are about 1,000 species of mold that are common in the U.S., but the 4 most common types in your home, I'm going to tell you what they are. Cladosporium, Penicillium, Alternaria, and Aspergillus. These are the 4 that we see the most in homes today.
Now, the Penicillium, is that related to penicillin?
It is, yes.
You know, I'm allergic to penicillin, so there you go.
You're allergic to that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, see? So maybe you had exposure to that and we're having allergic reactions. You can have actually allergic symptoms and reactions to mold even if you
aren't
allergic. Yeah. So just a little note to self. And hay fever-like symptoms are really what you want to think of. If you're having hay fever symptoms, that might include like an itchy nose, mouth and lips, maybe asthma attacks, you know, that rings a bell. Mm-hmm. Rashes is common. You definitely fatigue, headaches. You might have irritation with your eyes, nose, throat, sneezing. Think of nasal congestion and those kind of issues. And even shortness of breath, wheezing, and chest tightness are some of the things that you would experience if you have exposure to mold.
Yikes. And how, let's say we find it and we, you know, deal with the situation, how would you mitigate?
Okay, well, number one, and this is super important, is that you have to fix the leak within 24 to 48 hours. So if you have a leaky faucet, a leaky shower, wherever the water is coming from, it is imperative because mold is smart, it grows fast, and it likes to hide in dark places. So it's very typical for mold to grow behind walls, under floors, where you can't see it. So just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there.
Oh, dear.
Number one, you want to stop the leak and dry out any of the materials right away.
Okay.
If you have an area of mold that you've detected that's larger than 10 square feet, you definitely need to bring in a professional. Do not try to do that yourself. This is where people really make mistakes, is they try to handle it themselves and in that process expose themselves to mold and can even spread the mold. And mold has some molds have toxins. And I don't know if you're familiar, but I can go over some of those if we have time.
Oh, we don't, but I'm hoping that we'll have...
I'm going to talk about a cliffhanger.
I know. I'm like, oh my God, I'm like sick already. because I know we have a leak in the basement that sprung up over the weekend. And and I'm like freaking out. I'm like, I got to call my husband as soon as we hang up the phone.
I'll just tell you real quick, don't use bleach. And number two, do it yourself test that for a fraction of the cost to get started. Like I said, if you find that the problem is bigger, you want to bring in a professional. But sometimes I personally think testing is good because you want to know what kind of mold it is and then sort of deal with it from there.
Okay. Well, I know that we are going to probably share or recycle a post that you've done already about this, but we will definitely post information with this podcast once the podcast is out. Oh my God, I'm gonna
great, we can put some links to the tests and things like that.
Thank you so much, Lisa, and we will hopefully talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
Find out more about this Green Divas at Home segment and lots of other great low stress ways to live a deeper shade of green at thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E greendivas.com.
In 2006, a corner on South Wood Street in Chicago looked like nothing more than a vacant lot with weeds. But two men saw something very different. More after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order tall grass beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
Harry Rhodes and Orrin Williams of Growing Home, a nonprofit that uses organic farming to provide job training for hard-to-employ individuals, saw not just an empty lot, but rather an urban organic farm that could give them a chance to connect with the land. We had this idea that getting your hands dirty and seeing something grow could really help change people, Rhodes says. Growing Home has given those who have been homeless or incarcerated a renewed sense of purpose by simply learning to plant a seed in the ground and in themselves in what used to be a vacant lot. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
Being green can be so sexy. Well, at least you can be sexy and keep it green. Check out the Green Divas Eco Sexy Podcast for ways to keep it green in the bedroom or wherever you like to have sex. Brrr. Ooh, it's very good to be back with Veronica Monet, who is a relationship coach and a certified sexologist. She has a website called theshamefreezone.com, which I just love that. I for many reasons, but we're talking ecosexuality with Veronica, and she has such a wonderful twist in how we can find this relationship and make the connection between Earth and our own sexuality and what that really means. So, hi, Veronica.
Hey, I'm glad to be back.
So, this is an interesting topic, and I think it has to do with, you know, how ecosexuality can be the key to sustainability, and I'm curious how that pans out.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this is all new thought. So, if your listeners are going, "Huh?" I get it. I totally get it. But here's the assertion: that ecosexuality may hold the key to a peaceful, sustainable future.
I like it.
Yeah. And I want to also just make sure that your listeners know that there's a brand new book out, and I've got a chapter in it, and it's called Ecosexuality, When Nature Inspires the Arts of Love.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Thank
and,
you for mentioning
you
that, because I forgot
that
about that.
Over on Amazon.com, and it's an anthology, so we've got a lot of different voices coming in to talk about what is this thing called ecosexuality.
Right.
Now, when I talk about it may hold the key to a peaceful, sustainable future, what that means to me is that we shift our relationship to the earth so that she's more of a lover and less of a mother, which means then we're going to be in partnership with her and we're going to give back to her. But I go beyond that a little bit, too. I think it's very possible that when we've got a healthy relationship, a holistic relationship with our sexuality, that we're inviting ourselves to live in a place of pleasure and connection, that we have this relationship with this hormone called oxytocin, which is a bonding and connecting hormone, which makes us more peaceful.
Yeah.
Now, I know that sounds really outrageous, but let me tell you about a little animal. It's not really that little, but it's our cousin, and it's called the bonobo.
Oh, yeah.
And the bonobo looks like a chimpanzee, but it couldn't be different from a chimpanzee if it was a fish.
Wow.
So the chimpanzee, the bonobo, and the human all share a lot of DNA. We are the most closely related life forms. So
okay.
We all came off the same branch, the same evolutionary branch.
Right.
But we are different creatures. So the chimpanzee is patriarchy.
That's, right.
It's all based on force
yep.
and violence.
Right.
And interestingly enough, a core feature of the chimpanzee culture is sexual scarcity.
Really?
So the idea is that the dominant male, and maybe some of his buddies or cronies, have access, sexual access to the females, and nobody else does.
Nice. Yeah,
and
I mean,
it's enforced through domestic violence.
Oh my gosh! Talk about aggressive.
Savage
yeah.
Grimba is a primatologist who studied domestic violence in chimpanzees and documented that the dominant male would often beat a female about 3 weeks before she went into estrus, which means 3 weeks before she was able to have sex.
Ugh.
He'd start beating her for those 3 weeks, so that by the time she was available for sex, she wouldn't have sex with anybody else.
Ooh, jeez.
So
it's unpleasant, isn't it?
Oh, it's a really brutal culture. But every time I read about chimpanzees, they have infanticide, rape, murder, and war. Jane Goodall documented a 4-year war between two competing chimpanzee tribes.
Wow. Well, you know, and you can sort of see how some of that DNA has slipped into certain facets of our own world.
Certainly the argument.
Just
but
saying.
We actually share more DNA with the bonobo.
Thank God.
Let me tell you about the bonobo. The bonobo is all about sex.
All right.
And it's very peaceful. So it's dominated by the females. And not in such a way that there's pain and discomfort for the tribe's members. As a matter of fact, the males have lots of rights.
Yeah, well, wouldn't the matriarchy...
They have the right to have sex with anybody they want, as long as there's consent.
Right.
And there's a lot of consent going on with bonobos. So, but they're very pansexual, so the males have sex with each other, the females have sex with each other. They use sex as a way of toning down the tension.
Yeah. Does it literally
two competing bonobo tribes arrive at the same sugar cane field.
Okay.
And they're in competition all of a sudden for a common resource. If they were chimpanzees, they would have a war and they'd start ripping each other's hearts out.
Oh, yeah. Literally. Right.
But the bonobos will make love and share the food.
I'm sorry I'm laughing, but it seems so obvious. I don't know. I'm totally a bonobo at heart.
Well, what's interesting about this is that because we've been so patriarchal for 6,000 years, when people hear about the bonobos, they do laugh. They're incredulous. They can't believe this actually exists. And then it just seems like, how would that work? That's too odd. That's too strange. When I talk about the chimpanzees, people are horrified, but they're like, of course, that's natural.
Mm. Wow.
And what I want to try to bring to the fore here is the bonobos are natural too.
Right.
And we as human beings, since we share DNA with both chimpanzees and bonobos, we can choose. We don't have to be chimpanzees. We don't have to have murder, rape, and war.
Yeah,
go the bonobo way. But the thing that we're going to have to get past is our sexual shame.
Yep. Yeah, there's no question. My natural state is to make love, not war thing, you know, the old hippie phrase. I believe in collaboration, and I would totally be a bonobo, like, yeah, let's just, you know, we'll make it work for everybody. Come on, let's have a party.
Right. That's awesome.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, so, and that probably, I'm wondering, when you mention oxytocin, I happen to know a little bit about that. I used to be a certified labor coach and all that fun stuff for helping birth women. They didn't call it doula, really, when I was doing it back in the 80s, but that's what it was. And, you know,
that in itself is a great way to change our relationship with sex.
Well, so I learned a little bit about oxytocin and what happens, and certainly during sex it's released, but I'm wondering if in the bonobos, and I know nothing, but my first thought was, I wonder if it just tampers down that testosterone, that sort of aggressive hormone that can get going, right?
Well, you know, I don't like to demonize testosterone.
No, I
think testosterone is a beautiful thing. I got lots of it, and I get a lot done when I use my testosterone. Plus, when a woman has a, less libido than she'd like, it's not necessarily an approved use, but oftentimes she'll get a testosterone patch from her doctor. So I'm not really convinced that our culture is suffering from an overload of testosterone. Unless you're balancing testosterone and lifting a lot of weights.
Yeah.
And certainly if you ever spend any time in a gym, you know somebody who's on that level of testosterone is potentially a violent maniac.
Yeah. No,
but aside from that anomaly, most people are actually kind of estrogen dominant nowadays. A lot of obesity in the culture.
Yeah.
And fat cells carry a lot of estrogen.
Yeah, so, but I think when you talked about it, it sounded like the bonobos are more matriarchal. And in my mind, if women ruled the world, they wouldn't be dominant over men. It wouldn't be aggressively dominant over men. It'd be like peace. Let's find solutions.
I don't agree.
Okay.
But yet I do. Let me tell you how I agree. I think if we had a council of lesbian grandmothers, as the bonobos do.
Right, right. I love that.
The world would be a better place.
Yeah, totally. All right, I'm with you.
And I want to say that when we're living in the patriarchal soup, we're all affected. Yeah. Males and females are patriarchal. And the planet is a victim of it. And the animals on the planet are a victim of it.
And I just love the work that you are doing around birthing, because I think that's huge right there.
Yeah.
How we bring human beings into this world is so important. If you cut that umbilical cord too quickly, if you don't allow the baby to bond with the mother and her breast before taking it away to clean it, there's ways in which you actually create a lower oxytocin set point, and then all of us become pleasure averse.
Oh.
We become aversive to connection and love, and we become great soldiers and a violent people.
Ooh. All right. So this is a whole nother topic that we have to talk about. Oh, goody. I can't wait. Because apparently we could talk all day long. So
I'll take it.
Let's wrap this one up, and then, you know, we'll have more to talk about, and people will look forward to our next conversation. How about that?
Awesome.
So, everybody, you can go check out theshamefreezone.com, and hopefully we'll get
some. And also, don't forget Ecosexuality, the anthology on Amazon.com.
Thank you. Yes, I forgot that's how we connected with you. All right, stay tuned. Turned on yet? Well, go to thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com, to learn more about this Green Divas Eco-Sexy podcast and find other low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. Looking forward to chatting with this woman, Amy Ziff. She is the founder and executive director of Non-Toxic Certified, which I am really personally very excited about. And she's a mom and someone who's an advocate. She is personally predisposed to toxicity, and we're going to talk about what that means. And I'm like, oh, I'm right with you, sister. So I'm very excited about the work she's doing with Non-Toxic Certified, and let's talk to Amy. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Meg.
So, yeah, we started to chat before, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm almost a little afraid. But I am interested to hear about how you came to find out about this particular genetic predisposition.
Well, the story was long and winding for me. It wasn't a direct path and a moment where I had this aha. It was a tangled web, as
right.
are all of our lives, and something that finally I was able to connect the dots with. You know, I think that in life we are all, not only are we all on a path and our path is particular to us, and it is a journey and we can be open to learning or not. And
mm-hmm.
You know, for me, this path has been one that has sort of had stop, start. Like, am I really getting the lesson that I'm supposed to learn here? And,
wow.
You know, it goes all the way back to 1979 when I was sick. And I was told, or my mom, I should say, because I was 9 years old at the time, I was diagnosed with a disease called Sydenham's chorea. And back in those days, that was thought of really as a death sentence.
Oh, my.
And people told my mom that it was going to be a very miserable end, that I would be slowly slipping away, be put on morphine, and, you know, eventually I would die. And the reason was because I was having these uncontrollable shakes. I could not hold my hand out, and if you do it right now, you hold your hand out, your fingers are there, and they don't move.
Right.
Mine would flutter and flutter a bit spastically.
Mm.
Not all the time, but enough. And, you know, I was in fourth grade, and that was very hard to hold a pencil and sit still, and it was also, you know, it was just so distracting.
Yeah.
And I was having migraine headaches and other symptoms, so my mom was told this and took me to doctor after doctor, rejecting this fate for her daughter. And,
oh, mom.
And ultimately, I landed in the office of an allergist. And the allergist did all of this testing, which was pretty different at the time. And he put me on a special diet. Again, 1979. I went off corn, all corn products.
Yep.
This is pre-GMO.
Yeah.
All off gluten and sugar.
Yeah.
And you know what? Within 2 weeks, I had a miraculous recovery.
Yeah.
I lost the diagnosis, and I was a normal kid again. The trick was I had to stay on the diet. And so what happened was I learned at a very early age, this allergist also told me I was allergic to mold, allergic to, highly allergic to house dust and dust mites and every kind of tree and grass and my cats and my dog and,
wow,
you know, all of these things that were in my house. We had a house that had some mold in it. And so I was just really allergic to my environment. And this was my introduction to the world.
Wow.
And the fact that what is in our environment and what surrounds us can massively, massively impact how we live, how we feel, and how we, you know, operate, perform,
right,
if you will, out in the world.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be a kid like everybody else. So fast forward, I was trying to get pregnant several years later with my husband, you know, about 20 years later.
Right.
And we did get pregnant, and we were in, you know, at almost week 24. And unfortunately, we lost the baby.
Oh.
And it turned out that we lost this baby because of, after a lot of digging, the determination that I carry a specific gene type called the MTHFR gene mutation.
Hmm.
And that can, plus I have a clotting disorder, which further compounds the effects of that. But many people with MTHFR, it can lead to miscarriage. Okay, they rarely test for this. They'll let you have 6 miscarriages before they test for this.
But
what else comes with MTHFR? You don't what's called methylate properly. Methylation is the key component to clearing toxins from your body.
Is it like a liver function?
It's not a liver function per se. I mean, it involves different things.
Okay.
And different SNPs. And I don't want to, like, overwhelm people with it, the science behind it. But the key thing to know is that if you're not methylating properly, you can't clear things from your body that you should clear. Thus, why I'm a higher likelihood to have a reaction to my environment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Some of us, I think probably many of the people listening today, are, you know, feel like, anyway, the canaries in the coal mine. They've been drawn to this topic because they themselves suffer in one manner or
another. Actually, I've called myself that before.
Yes. And my children were that. So then I successfully had 3 children, and I had a singleton and then twins. And my kids were allergic to everything. They were allergic to diapers. They were allergic to creams. They were allergic to hypoallergenic lotions and, you know, organic, seemingly organic products. You know, I didn't know what I knew now, so I could be duped by, you know, marketing terms that confused me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought I was buying them good things, and yet here they were breaking out in hives and rashes, and I thought, what in the world is going on?
Hmm.
Well, it turns out that, you know, there are a lot of nasty things in all of our products.
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy to be allergic to what's in a regular average diaper, and into an average cream, and even something labeled hypoallergenic. So you don't have to have MTHFR to be super sensitive to those things, but many times people are. They just probably don't know. I mean, as much as 50% of the population has or carries the MTHFR gene mutation on at least one pair of their
Now, is
genes.
That a blood test? Do you have to have a specific genetic test?
Yeah, you can do. It's definitely something. If you're thinking, does this sound like me? I wonder.
Right.
You can have the test done. It is a relatively simple blood test. If you go to 23andMe, you can find out if you carry this gene mutation. And it's really informative. There are some supplements that you can take to help you methylate better. And I live for my supplements. You know, my B vitamins are really, really important for me. And people like me because they help you do that process. And you need those.
Yeah.
But no regular doctor was telling me this.
No.
As I said, it was a journey. And it took me studying all of this with different doctors, NDs, MDs, DCs, to figure out what was going on and connecting these dots.
Yeah.
And then it was this unbelievable, you know, unbelievable thing that happened. And I realized, okay, well, my kids carry this gene, right?
Mm.
I need to help them
right.
from the outset so that they can just be them best selves, be unencumbered with what can otherwise kind of come along here. So I really was motivated to clean up, so to speak, our
yeah.
our house and our surroundings. And, you know, from what I learned way back long ago, it's like you can't do just the product if you're not looking at diet.
Right.
So they all go hand in hand in helping the body do its job. The body is designed beautifully to detox. So everything that we do, you know, that I think about my home with my family is about how can we help our bodies do that detoxing so we can perform at our highest level.
Well, and even if you don't have the MTHFR, and I told you before what that looked like to me when I was reading about it, I'm like, oh, my God, mother effer.
It is. It's such a mother.
You know? But if even if you don't have that, our bodies, I believe, are getting overloaded and
yeah.
we are having trouble processing toxins because we encounter them in so many forms, in so many ways, we don't even realize
That's
that when
right.
we step out of our homes, even if our homes are extremely well controlled with non-VOC paints and finishes and super organic furniture, I mean, and very few people can even do that.
That's right. It's so hard. You have to be actively making an effort to do what I call, you know, living a no-tox life. And the truth is you only can attempt it because you can't avoid all toxins. And, you know, I like to make this seem possible for people. You don't have to be scared about this. If you can actively reduce some of the toxins from your everyday environment, give your body a break, then your body knows what to do. It knows
right,
how to clear
right.
those. You
it's
know?
It's so, a matter of learning how to support
That's
your body,
right.
you know, from the outside and the inside, you know.
That's right. And so people can really take, I think, salvation, you know, feel excited about the fact that they are empowered
right.
to make a difference in their own lives and in the lives of their loved ones
by
taking some steps.
You've become quite an advocate for the rest of us to not only you had started by, I know you had a store, an online store. I don't know if you still have Verite.
It does exist on my blog where I talk about living a no-tox life. But, you know, what I'm really excited about is what I'm doing now, where
yes.
my focus is, which is the Made Safe and Non-Toxic Certified Seals for products so that nobody has to go to a special store to find products that won't
Right.
you know, harm them
and
their families.
And you don't have to be a freaking PhD trying to read and remember and discern these labels. Somebody
That's
has
right.
done that homework, and that's part of what you've been doing all these years,
exactly.
is understanding and putting this all together. And I am really excited about this non-toxic certified concept, that the idea of having a label that will tell me, okay, I don't have to, like, read this whole label. I know it's going to be clean.
Exactly. I can trust it. I mean, we're so excited about bringing this to market, and we will have products on store shelves in January 2016. So coming very soon for people to find items with these labels on them. And it's a scientifically rigorous process. And we look at whether or not there's going to be any human health harm. We look at environmental degradation to make sure there's no environmental issue.
Yeah.
We look at aquatic toxicity, which
yes.
is one of the best ways
yes.
we can tell if there's going to be wildlife harm
yep.
or harm to the larger, you know, ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And we look for just some general toxicity. We do modeling. I mean, it's game-changing to think that we can make it what I like to call think-proof for people to find products that won't harm themselves or their families.
And
you know,
what categories are we looking at? Is this all personal care products, home care, or is it pretty much, are you planning to kind of venture into everything?
Well, at scale, we want to venture into everything. We want to have cell phones and computers, which are
mm-hmm.
highly toxic,
mm-hmm.
Ultimately made in a revolutionary way and carry our seal. But to start,
right.
we will definitely be in personal care, in baby products, in beauty products, sleep products, so mattresses and things like that, at the get-go, household cleaning as well. I think those are pretty much the five areas that we'll start with,
okay.
And then we'll roll from there. Because the point is, you don't need, and anyone on this path, you know, knows, you don't need hundreds of products. You need a few really good products, and you can start breaking down what you're using and reducing actively your body burden.
And I'm wondering, like, paints, will you have, like, you know, some paint? There's a couple of paint companies.
There are some good paint companies.
Mythic Paint, and then there was another one that's I can't think of the name of it, that I've used in the studio.
YOLO
was good. I don't know if it still exists. And then there was another one, had a baby on the cover. It was like Gentle Home or something.
You know, even Benjamin Moore makes no VOC paint.
Yeah.
So there's no reason for people to paint with anything other than an absolute zero VOC paint. Doesn't make the paint perfect, but it's a whole lot better than...
Well, I will tell you that the Mythic paint that I used for throughout my house before we moved in was zero VOC. It literally didn't have a smell. We kept the windows closed. And it covered better. My painter was so skeptical, and when it was over, he was like, oh, my God. And the thing is, like, maybe a dollar more per can, but it covered better. And so now he's using that just in general and recommending it to people. I'm not pitching for Mythic in particular, but that was my experience. And I've used others that are also equally as professional, you know, whatever.
Yes, we painted our entire house with no VOC paints when it came time to do that, and it was astonishing. They dry more quickly, and there was no scent whatsoever, which was just incredible. Having little kids, you really worry about the off things. So, yes, we will ultimately move into paints. That won't be day one. But we'll get there. We don't want there to be an item that you use in your house that we won't do, including couches and...
plates, whatever, right?
Right.
All of it.
Exactly. All of that. But it'll take us some, give us a little time.
I know. So tell me, I mean, I want to be clear. You're not selling these products necessarily. What you're doing is providing a seal for products that are already being manufactured.
Precisely. Okay. We don't sell a thing. We just provide the seal that the manufacturer can then put on their product label so that consumers know at the moment of purchase whether or not something is what we call made safe, made with safe ingredients,
now,
is what the literal translation means.
I assume what you'll have is a directory on your site so people can kind of look through and see what companies are on board. And
We absolutely will list the companies we work with, but it is screened product by product, so we don't, want to say, you know, just because we're working with, we'll take one of our cleaning brands, Green Shield Organics, just because we're working with them, you still want to look down to, you know, is everything passing their screening? I think that's an important point, and the reason why I bring it up is just because if you're doing this even on your own, you know, what makes it so difficult is that you've got to be looking ingredient by ingredient. And so, you know, it's ingredient by ingredient, product by product, line by line, home by home, you know, that we do these things.
And so what your website, I assume, and obviously the labels will be out there.
Yep.
But people can go to your website and sort of look up a product and go, oh, okay, cool.
Exactly. They can go to madesafe.org.
Madesafe.org. Thank you.
Yes. They can go there and find out, and they can learn more about us. I mean, I encourage people to understand what I like to call what our bar for purity is. It's very scientifically based.
Yep.
And there are places where there are data gaps, and we try and fill those. We use an outside chemist. We look at different things, and we do that to the best of our ability. And what we look forward to is one day having raised enough money that we'll be able to close those data gaps with actual studies with some of the organizations that we partner with.
Right. EWG, or do you work with any of those folks?
We work with, like, the Ecology Center out of Michigan, and they could do testing for us and really help close those gaps. So
Great.
That's exciting. Or TIPED, which specializes in endocrine disruption. And that's a big one for
it
people,
is.
A
yeah.
big question, you know,
yep.
what is going on
yeah.
With the hormonal system? So,
well,
yeah, it's exciting.
I'm very excited, and we're looking forward to, and when can people look forward to, like, sort of a full launch?
They can look forward to finding products in January 2016
wow.
in stores like Costco and all the way through to Whole Foods Market. So our aim is to make this available to the masses so
oh.
that people who have no idea what a body burden even is
yeah.
can look at something, see a made safe certification or a non-toxic certification symbol and
yeah.
say, well, I want that product. I mean,
yes.
who doesn't want the laundry detergent that's safe, right?
Yeah.
It's a pretty much a no-brainer. And so that's exciting for us, you know, to be able to grow this movement.
Yeah. So this segment will air in January. So I'm telling you, people, go to madesafe.org. Read up, learn up. I'm pretty excited about this, and do what you can to support this effort because I, for one, would like to know.
Exactly.
Thanks so much, Amy, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks for having me, Meg.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's THE greendivas.com.